Welcome to a Nerdsight episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And as you probably noticed, we are missing our sound effects man, Mr. Agent underscore 70. Hopefully he'll make it later on in the show. But I do have with me tonight, Dirt, aka PCN underscore Dirt. From popculturenetwork.com.
Hi, Mom.
And we have a special guest with us tonight. We are joined by a man that has his own comic book out this week, Mr. Bruce Brown, writer of Howard Lovecraft and Kingdom of Madness.
Thank you.
So I want to thank him for joining us tonight. He's going to perhaps stick on for the entire show. We'll see.
Although we go pretty late sometimes, so we may hit his bedtime, because I know we've hit my bedtime on several occasions.
I was going to say, we've done a pretty good job lately of ending within like under an hour and a half.
Cool. 2 hours, 2.5, 3, you know, it happens sometimes.
A long marathon session.
Yeah. Okay, when there's lots of comic book news to discuss, can't put limits.
True. Well, but, speaking of comic book news, do we have any?
Yes, we do. Let me do my plug-in real quick. Make sure to go to the Click Nation. Don't be shaking your head at me.
No plug.
TheClickNation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, comic book reviews, and so forth. Follow the Twitter account at TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe on YouTube, YouTube.com/TheClickNation. Circle us on Google Plus. Just search for The Click Nation. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. So now news. Well, I guess you want to do news, or do you want to actually interview our guest?
Oh yeah, I guess yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he made the effort to be here. I guess we should talk to him a little bit.
Yes. So yeah, I guess you can give some. Some backstory on how we got to have Bruce on the show tonight.
Well, as most people know, I do work in a store that happens to sell comics, and Bruce has come in several times. In fact, when his first book, the first Howard Lovecraft book came out, I actually interviewed him for the Pop Culture Network. We did a podcast. And then, you know, I see him all the time. And, it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, there he is. You know, whatever, no big deal. And then I was sitting there last week, I was going, oh, you know, we do a show where we talk about comics and we do plug books coming out and have creators on, I should probably ask him if he'd like to be on the show, you know? So we did some emails and got everything together.
Nice. So I guess first up, let me turn this effect off. I'm trying to find the sound effects that Agent 70 always has going. Okay, there they are, sounds. All right. So I guess first up, Bruce, can you let people know about the comic you have coming out this week?
This week in shops, I have the new book called Howard Lovecraft and the Kingdom of Madness. It's the third book in the Howard Lovecraft series. If you're not familiar with it, basically what it is it's an all-ages book to introduce kids to the works of H.P. Lovecraft. And it started off with Howard Lovecraft in the Frozen Kingdom. Then it went to Howard Lovecraft in the Unseen Kingdom. And this week comes out the third chapter, Howard Lovecraft in the Kingdom of Madness.
Nice.
I always was a big fan of At the Mountains of Madness by Lovecraft. And I wanted to do kind of my twist on it. Put the characters in that storyline.
I guess it just begs the question that, you know, when you think of things you want to introduce children to, you want to introduce them to, you know, sports, history, classical music, H.P. Lovecraft. I mean, it doesn't – normally you don't think of that as something for children, something that you cultivate for the youth.
And that's – I don't even really – I mean, most people, I think that's what catches people so off guard by this series, is that they sit there and think, those two words should never mix, Lovecraft and kids. But I really, I wrote a short story once for a horror anthology, and I did this story about at the time when Lovecraft's father had a mental breakdown, and I kind of had to pick him as a kid and kind of added a mystical spin to it. But after I did that, I couldn't stop thinking about the character, thinking, man, Lovecraft has all these really cool characters. And if you really think about kids' stories, you know, like Tales of Grimm's Brothers, they were really dark. And I thought, you know, why not try to take elements of what Lovecraft did and, like, actually place him amongst the characters as when he was a kid? And the first book received, you know, just an amazing response for it. It was in the Tribune. It was in Rumor Magazine. I think it really was just an incredible outpouring of reaction to it. So we just kept going.
Now, this is through Arcana.
Yes.
And I've noticed that when you go to their website, they show it as like three issues is how they show it, but then you buy it as the book.
Right.
Were the individual issues ever printed?
No.
Okay.
You know what I think it is that with digital, you know, downloads suddenly becoming, changing the dynamics of the industry, you know, suddenly I think they decided, hey, we'll first release it digitally, then we'll release it the three, then we'll release it as the book. You know, I think it's all just kind of how more indie publishers are marketing now. Actually, a lot of comic companies, all of them are starting to go kind of a mix of all that.
One thing I wanted to say, and I mean this as the highest possible compliment, but reading this particular one, I really felt like it kind of fit into that whole Hellboy kind of BPRD type world. Not that you're necessarily ripping him or anything, but it's like you're kind of drawing from the same sources and you have like this big sense of adventure going on in this one, because they're, you know, flying to the Antarctic and they're, you know, going exploring, you know, kind of in that pulp adventure kind of way.
You know, I mean, if you look at the influences that Lovecraft's had on a variety of writers, I mean, you'll find that in Hellboy. You'll find that, you know, Guillermo del Toro, huge Lovecraft fan, Stephen King. I mean, a lot of comic book writers. You know, I mean, Arkham from Batman, you know, Lovecraft. So there is a lot of that. Honestly, I hate to confess, I've never read Hellboy.
I haven't either.
I've seen the movies, but I've never read the book. But no, I take it as a compliment. I wanted some big scale story.
And I really like the artwork, Thomas Boatwright. The way the artwork is done, his line work, it almost has like this kinetic kind of scribble energy to it. But then he goes back and everything that's colored almost looks like it's all done in marker. It looks almost like a straight ink. I don't know if this is digital or if he's doing it old school, but it has a really nice look to it. And the way that a lot of times he'll draw the figures and not necessarily draw everything in with lines. He'll let the coloring a lot of times kind of fill in a lot of the details. Yeah. I really enjoyed the way that worked out.
Oh, it does look kind of nice.
Look, because it was the first time I could introduce Herbert West, which is another one.
Oh, did we lose him?
Still there, Bruce?
Uh-oh.
While we take that short break to hopefully get Bruce on, we can also let everyone know that Agent 70 is here with us tonight.
What's up, everybody?
Oh, suddenly he comes on and he gets all the sound effects.
Yeah. He's the only one that knows, he's the only one that can look at the icons and know which icon will give you which sound effect, because I still haven't figured that out. So Agent 70, since I forgot to send you an email to let you know who we were having on tonight, we have a special guest, Mr. Bruce Brown, who's a friend of Dirt's, has a comic book out today, actually, or this week.
I think I'm back.
Ah, there we go.
Welcome back.
Good.
All right, so you were talking about the Reanimator.
Okay.
Yeah, this was the first chance I got to. It was always a fun character of Lovecraft's. So
did we lose him again?
Uh-oh.
It was live TV. A live podcast.
Love it.
It's no worries. That's what we're used to on the show.
I hope he's not clicking mute by accident.
Hopefully not. Hopefully maybe it's just an internet connection issue.
Well, I'll say this, since, you know, we're kind of talking about it and we're waiting for him to come back, is that a lot of times when I sit down and read stuff that's kind of like a general ages or an all ages thing, I always kind of wonder, you know, like, is this okay for my kids? You know, because I have two kids. So it's one of those things I try to keep in my mind when I go through it. And when you're dealing with Lovecraft and that kind of stuff, there are concepts that are really creepy and things that are really kind of that can be really gross and they're nightmarish, not in the way that like things jump out at you, but the way it kind of, you know, permeates your thoughts and you start looking at dark corners and things like that. But this, as an all ages book, I would have no problem with my kids reading this. You know, I mean, this really is a fun. And it's a good story. You know, it's like at its core, there's a very kind of wholesomeness to it, despite the fact that it's Howard Lovecraft and Cthulhu monsters and, you know, things like that.
Okay, I think I'm back.
Welcome Yay! Back. Woo! Third time's charm.
Yeah, you know what? Part of the thing I wanted to do when I was writing the book was I knew it was a topic, there were topics and all these things that, you know, adults can read Lovecraft, and it's scary. But with this book, I wanted to get it so it is something, you know, it's not going to terrify the kids. I didn't want to show, you know, anything really horrific. And really, even Howard, who's a little kid, I mean, he has this giant elder god protector no matter where he goes. So, I mean, he's protected. There's a certain element of safety for him as well.
Yeah. One thing I noticed that jumped out at me is that a lot of times as they move from one area to another, color plays a big part of kind of differentiating one area. Like they go to an underground lab and everything is very green. Right. They go to the part where there's these like killer demonic penguins, and everything's very kind of orange. Were there discussions on how the color would do that? Or is that something that he kind of did on his own?
He did on his own.
Oh, okay.
I mean, when I write a script, I mean, I'd like to say, yeah, we had an in-depth discussion on the color. But, you know, I mean, when I write the script, I mean, you have to give yourself a little bit to turn over the project to the artist and let him add his flavor to it. So, I mean, that was something Thomas did. I mean, I can make sure that, like, when I say, hey, we're going to be in an underground laboratory and I want it to look weird and alien, you can't have it like at a circus. But, you know, other than that, you got to give it a really good thing. The penguins.
How long does it take to put one of these together from script to printed copy?
Believe it or not, it has taken sometimes to a year. And it really isn't the writing part of the script. It's the art. I mean, it takes time to get that going. But really, I would say about a year. And then on top of it, you know, you'll find an artist. Maybe the artist can't get to the book at the time. You know, but overall, that's the time.
And it seems it's such a long – I guess, you know, realizing it is a long process, but I guess – once it's done and your book is out, that sort of makes it all worth it.
It totally does. I mean, for indie guys, you got to understand, like a guy at Marvel is going to go to work, and that's what he's doing, is picking out books. But, you know, you're going to go to the guy who is, you know, the waiter at Applebee's. And when he gets off work, he goes home and draws. So it slows the indie process down more.
All right. I like how Dirt did bring up the, you know, how, you know, books for all ages and considering what would be good for, you know, your son or daughter. It seems like that's more and more that's a market that seems to be pretty profitable now, especially with the, was it the My Little Pony books and Adventure Time and Goosebumps. Books of that nature being out.
Goosebumps, you know, things like that. Oh, yeah. There's a very, very big kids market out there. There really is.
Well, I think it helps that, you know, someone like myself who grew up on comics now as a parent with children, you know, it's like I want them to read comics as well. So it's like I have an excuse to buy them some comics. Then, yes, I'm going to grab Ultimate Spider-Man, the, you know, Disney XD series, and I'll grab My Daughter, My Little Pony and Powerpuff Girls. And I just think that a lot of times, you know, when I grew up, comics were always, if you went to the newsstand, it's like every comic on the newsstand had to be all age friendly.
Right.
And then we kind of hit that period when I was in my teens and my late teens where it's like nothing was appropriate for kids.
Yeah.
Like everything was dark and scary and bloody and whatever. And now we've kind of hit that happy medium where it's like the kids can have their, you know, classic comic books that appeal to everybody, and then the adults can have their books, and they can be in the same store but completely different markets.
And you know what? I think that's vital for the comic industry because, I mean, it was getting to the point where you weren't getting new readers. I mean, there were kids who, yeah, I know Spider-Man from a movie, but, you know, hey, every week there's a story coming out here.
Mm.
And I think they were getting away from, you know, the market that built them. And now I think it's starting to kind of turn back.
Yeah, because every you know, new reader doesn't necessarily need to have their first book be Batman or the Avengers.
You know, or a book by, you know, like the Punisher or something. I mean, there's certain books where, you know, it's good they've got adult books. That's great. And I've done a few of them myself, but you know, it's also good. I've heard so many parents say, I'm a big fan of Lovecraft. I'm a big comic book reader. And how cool is it? I can buy a book for my kids now when I hit the comic shop. So, I mean, that was rewarding.
So, I'm not sure if you mentioned this earlier, but was Howard Lovecraft and Kingdom Madness, is that self-published or is that
through Arcana?
It comes from Arcana. They're like a Canadian company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, they've been around for a while.
Yeah, and the book is very well done. I mean, just as far as, you know, sometimes I've bought comics from, you know, Joe Schmo Comic Company, and it's the cheapest possible paper, and pages are falling out and whatever. But this one, I noticed actually going through that they use some sort of laser color printing process because there's actually a texture to the ink, which is something that you don't see a lot of times nowadays. So when you have areas of thick black ink, it actually stands up. You can actually feel the texture on it. So it's a very high quality process that they used.
That, you know, I mean, I understand there's times where companies go cheaper because of the immense cost of doing books. I mean, I don't think people understand the amount of money that goes into one book. And for a big company, that's not a big deal, but for like a little indie guy trying to do a book, it's tough. I mean, it can be an expensive process to do with not a lot of return. You have to do this because you like it.
I was going to ask, do you have anything else cooking? Any other, you know, fires cooking?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I just signed a deal for a new book called Dr. Herbert West, Amazing Adventures in Medical Malpractice. And what it is it's like my new all ages reanimator series. And Herbert West is this child genius who has to move town to town with his family because no matter where he goes, his genius leads to destruction. And he gets into this town and he gets, after inventing all these machines, he gets bored and he reanimates the dead out of boredom. And in the process of reanimating the dead, he's eating donuts while he's doing it. Well, the dead come back to life and they start ravaging the town, eating all the donuts. And the thing about the book is they try to stop the zombies before they eat all the donuts and turn on to people.
Is that tying into the same Herbert West in here, or is that a modern tale?
It's the same time period, but it's not the same Herbert West in there. This is a kid's Herbert West.
So is he always going to be getting a sample of everything as well? Because that's one thing. Herbert West in this book, every time something happens, I got to get a sample.
No, not at all. Quite the opposite. In this book, I would look at it like I kind of always thought of – I don't know if you've ever seen the PBS Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, the BBC version?
Yeah, the BBC version. I mean, he's a really smart guy to the point where – he's a really smart kid to the point where people have a hard time understanding him. He's kind of out of touch with things because of it. I mean, he's reanimating the dead because he's bored, you know, where people would be horrified at the idea of doing that. So, no, he's not like this, Dr. West. I mean, actually, the idea for the series was that I had fun with this Dr. West and thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool to do a kid's version? And I like zombie stories a lot, and I thought, you know, how can I do a zombie story for kids that will have a little element of scare but not too much? So I thought zombies that eat donuts seemed pretty amusing.
Is that going to follow the same format of three issues, one trade, or are you looking at that as a one-issue special? Or?
You know what? When I first read this book, the first series in Howard, you don't know how well they'll sell. So any kind of indie book you put out there, there's no guarantee. I mean, people think, well, why don't you do a series and why don't you kick it out every month? It all depends on sales. And if your first book comes out and it doesn't make enough, they won't do a second.
Yeah.
I mean, you're out of luck.
What do they consider, you know, a successful book?
You know what? I mean, that's a good question. I don't know the answer. Yeah. I know when my publisher says, hey, let's do more of these. You know, I've done books that I really liked that I thought, okay, these will take off, and they didn't. And I've done books where, you know, like I did this series, and it went nuts. So, I mean, you just try to put out books you like because you have to invest so much time in this, so much money in this with so little reward. You have to do it because you love it. So you just put out your books and see what happens.
Are you planning another kingdom for Howard?
You know, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I'm going to do Herbert West. It depends on, you know, if they want more. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. It really is up to the publisher. I mean, if it was up to me, there's several books that I've done that I would have just kept cranking out books for. But, yeah, it depends on sales. I mean, so far, it does really – all the books have done well, and they keep selling because there's always new Lovecraft fans coming out of the woodworks. And there's always, you know, people looking for a book that they can get their kids. And there's people who like, you know, scary movies who want to introduce their kids to scary stuff. But in a non-traumatizing, let's take Jimmy to therapy kind of way.
What's the fun in that?
Well, yeah, good point. But yeah, so another Howard book, I don't know. We'll see. It really just depends on sales. I mean, anymore, that's what, on an indie level, it's so much tougher because, like, you know, you don't have to worry if you're writing Spider-Man. Hey, if I don't sell enough Spider-Man this week, he's done. You know, you're guaranteed you've got that built-in audience, where here you've got to kind of build it from scratch and hopefully keep them. Mm-hmm. So to do three books actually is a pretty big deal for indie.
Yeah, especially, I was going to say, this one was $14.95, which I think for a lot of people, on a book like this, you would almost expect it to be $20. So coming in at $15 actually makes it seem like a little better deal even for an indie trade like this. But, I mean, like I said, I was surprised at how high quality the physical printing and, you know, publication of the book was.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, that's the thing with indie is if they don't stay competitive. I mean, it's such a tough market. I mean, you've got major companies that do nothing but, you know, promote this stuff, and they have divisions solely made just to promote it. I mean, when I did the first Howard on promotion, I spent 250 hours in front of a computer writing people, you know, nonstop. Hey, please review my book. Please review my book. And I wrote like every paper in the nation. I wrote every magazine I could think of. And, you know, if you hear back from one, that's huge. But that one comes at the price of you spending hours trying to get one person to look at your stuff. I just got very lucky.
It proves how good your material was.
You know what? I think that, and it proves that. I like that. But it proves that there were Lovecraft fans also. And there was something different about the book that nobody'd ever heard of. And so they were willing to give it a try. And sometimes I even stumbled on, you know, some reviews, some big reviews, and I didn't even realize I was getting them. I remember when I got into Rue Morgue magazine, a guy wrote me and he was like, I had written so many people that I lost track of who I wrote. And I thought this guy was like from a blog. So I said, yeah, sure, I'll send you the book. And the next thing I know, he's like, okay, our magazine's coming out next month. I had to go find out what it was. I didn't know it was like the number one selling horror magazine in the world. So let alone that he was going to feature the book. So, I mean, there was times I got lucky on that. But, yeah, no, it took a lot of work. It's like you scratch and claw to get ahead in this stuff. I don't think people who read comics realize what really goes into it.
That sort of reminds me of back when I was applying for jobs. I applied for so many, I started like writing them down in a notebook, saying like what the date and the company that I sent my resume to, just so when they did reply back, I'd have reference to go back and say, oh, okay, I did it on this day.
See, and I should have done that and totally forgot who I was talking to after a certain point. You know, I got lucky, I wrote Julia Keller at the Tribune. It was like, you look on the sites and find names, and I saw she did reviews. Well, I didn't know she was the main reviewer. I didn't know she was a Pulitzer Prize winner. You know, and she's like, yeah, I'll review your book. I expected it to be like, here's a little column. It was half the page. So, I mean, I got some amazing help.
Well, yeah. Next time I email you, I'll be sure to point out that I'm from Time Magazine. They just won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, I will. I'll have to put a star next to that. Well, that's the thing. I mean, no honesty. I love getting a chance to talk about my books, and I've invested so much of my time and money and to doing all these things so that when you get to see that moment where you walk into a comic shop and there's your book and you can hold it in your hand, it's an incredible feeling.
And then you got to make sure you want to start the process all over again.
Yeah, it actually does. It actually does. You know, I mean, you do that once and you're like, okay, I'll get two more going, you know. But I've actually slowed down a little bit. It's just tough to juggle so many of them.
And you did say you have the full-time job doing something else too,
right? Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing about indie guys, a lot of indie guys doing this. It's not their job to put the book out. So they're doing it at night, or they're doing it on the weekend, or, you know, it's that time when the kids go to bed and they're up drawing. And it's an amazing amount of work. I mean, Renzo Podesta, who did the first book and who's doing that new book with me, I mean, he paints the pages. I mean, he does this beautiful, dark, kind of eerie painting work, but it takes a long time to do, you know, and you write the script and you're thinking, okay, let's whale it now. But it just takes, it's a slow process.
Nice. Is there anything else you want to bring up, Doug?
Actually, I was just thinking of the most random thought is that because he does come in and shop in our store, one of the things that we do at our store that nobody else in town does is we always bag and board the comics. And Bruce is known as the guy that won't take the bags and boards. He's the guy who comes up, he'll grab them off the shelf in the bags and boards, take them out of the bags and boards, and then set them down on the counter. He's like, I don't need those. I buy these things to read them. And you so know, he's always known as the guy that won't take the bags and boards.
I used to collect them when I was a kid, and I had this big collection, and I remember going away to camp or some crap like that, and while I was gone, my mom got rid of all of them. I mean, and it was just like, I remember ever since then, I was so frustrated. And God, now they were probably worth some bucks because it was ages ago. But, you know, I mean, ever since then, I just sat there, I thought, I'm just going to read them and enjoy them. So I never got the, so it's true. I don't ever get the bags or anything like that. In fact, when I'm done, I try to pass them on to friends of mine with kids, you know, say, hey, here's a bunch of comics. Let your kids read them.
Which little kids got all those copies of Morbius?
Okay, there are some that I don't pass on. Good point. I do kind of check.
Oh, yeah, let me ask, what are some of your influences in the comic book business?
You know, I would say there's a couple. I mean, everybody points to – am I still here?
Yes, sir, here.
Yes, sir.
Okay, cool. Just checking. Yeah, I mean, every time I remember the one run that really caught my attention was Christopher Priest's run on Black Panther. And I
Christopher Priest's run was so influential that he was gone after the applause.
The NSA doesn't want you to know about his run on Black Panther. That's what it comes down to.
I'm sure he'll be back in a second.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it was – so that – I remember reading that. I guess whenever I read comics and they – anymore, I don't read them – the same as I used to, because when you start to write them, you notice stuff like, wow, this guy's got a lot of panels on this page, or this guy's going a lot of heavy narrative. So when something came along like that, when he did that run, it blew my mind. I mean, it made me want to write different and challenge myself to write kind of different things. I mean, and you know, yeah, you can look at Alan Moore and all these other classic ones, but it's some of the odd ones that I looked at.
Okay.
But, yeah.
All right, well, here, let me throw some details on the book. Again, it is Howard Lovecraft and the Kingdom of Madness. It's available on Comixology. You can buy it there digitally if you want, or if you want the paper copy, it's Arcana Publishing. It's $14.95. This is a full trade with an ISBN number, so you can buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, places like that, you can get it. And like I said, it is a very highly high quality printed book. Like, I don't even know what the right term is for how well it's put together, how well the printing is, how nice the paper is. Like, it's
actually a nice package.
Yeah, it's a very slick laser printed. It looks really nice. Fully painted cover. So it's really nice package. And at $14.95, it's definitely a good bookshelf piece of material.
Here, here.
Oh, he's back. There's a clone.
There's two of them. That's one lead. There, Bruce?
A double Cthulhu.
One of them died and left.
Ah!
All right, so I guess when he gets his audio back up, we'll make sure to give him the opportunity to plug whatever accounts he has online where people can go reach out to him. But in the meantime, just before I move on, double check one more time. You there, Bruce? Okay. Let's see what comic book news we have going on this week. I'm sure he wanted to chime in on that anyway. Let's see. First up, so we know Jason Aaron launched The Amazing X-Men, and currently the storyline taking place is they're bringing back Nightcrawler.
Okay.
Hey, Bruce is back.
Okay, back.
Yay!
Sweet.
Before we, in case we happen to lose you again, let people know where they can find you online, whatever social media accounts or websites you want to plug, or let people know where they can find and order your book.
You know, I mean, it's going to be on Amazon in a couple days, or you can go to your shop and order it. The digital versions on Comic Mixology. Amazon has all my other books on there as well. If you just go to, like, any of them and you'll click on Bruce Brown, it will pull up all the different books I've done.
Great. You want to stay on while we...
Yeah, I'll stick around.
Okay. Absolutely. Then I have to pull your... What's the saying? Pull your arm?
Twist your arm.
Twist your arm.
Twist your arm.
I was going to say pull your leg. That didn't sound right either. So Jason Aaron, of course, launched the Amazing X-Men book, and now we come to find out that, I guess, with all his writing duties of Southern Bastards and the Marvel event series, Original Sin, and according to him, some other books that he can't announce just yet, he is stepping aside from Amazing X-Men, and the writing team of Craig Kyle and Chris Yost will be taking over.
Isn't that only like 4 issues deep?
4 right now. Okay. I think they said the article, if I don't feel like clicking on the link right now, but I think it said issue 6, they take over.
Okay.
Which is kind of, it's like, what's the purpose of, I'm sure they want another X-Men book out there anyway, but it's like he stepped aside from Wolverine to X-Men. Now he's having to step aside. He's basically gone from the X-Men side of the Marvel Universe. And I guess he has Thor. I forgot to mention that. Thor, God of Thunder. But I guess it would be a thing to see of what secret books he has coming out later, if they're Marvel books or maybe more creator-owned material.
Yeah, that's what I was just wondering, if he was slowly kind of removing himself out of the Marvel machine.
But then... Being tied to Thor and then doing the Original Sin, hopefully that's not the case, because I do enjoy his work. Maybe he's stepping on to more high-profile stuff. Maybe he'll get an Avengers book spinoff book like everyone else does.
Like they need another Avengers title?
Yeah.
All new or, mighty Avengers now?
I'm pretty sure there'll be one of the spinoff like Inhuman books after Inhuman gets going, so maybe... He's got one of those going. It's probably something coming out of Original Sin.
You know, I mean, but there are a lot of guys you notice who are working for Marvel or working for major companies that are actually going back to the creator-owned stuff because they own it. I mean, you don't own Spider-Man when you write him. You have a book of rules you've got to do this with and play by, and, you know, the agent isn't out there shopping your Spider-Man, you know, you own nothing. So a lot of these guys are trying to put their own lines out. So maybe he's doing that. He's a great writer. Very gritty.
Yeah, it seems to be the move is, you know, do the the big company books to get your name out there and draw the build a fan base, yeah, and then go back, create your own, and try to bring that audience with you.
Yeah, it's ironic because people spend all their time trying to work for the big companies, and then when they get there, they pop back to where they started.
Yeah. All right, next bit of news. Let's see, the CW let out some images of, I can't even say the guy's name, something Gustin Grant. Who is playing Flash?
Yeah.
It's him in full costume. And I said he looks like the Crime Syndicate Johnny Quick.
That's not a bad description of it. It's pretty good.
Costume does look all right. It's, the dark red instead of the bright red, of course, because bright red would look foolish on TV.
Do you remember the original TV series?
I do.
Yes, with the sculpted muscles.
With sculpted muscles on it, yeah.
And a very chiseled-chinned Barry Allen.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I guess he'll have a role on the show.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I remember that series back. It was like a spinoff from after Tim Burton did Batman. I think some of the producers came and did it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. And let's see. Kevin Smith returns to comics for Batman 66 meets the Green Hornet. Gets a big chuckle out of Bruce and a yawn from Dirt.
It's bad when you come out and say, hey, we got this book coming out with this guy, and the good news is he's finished all the scripts. how did they get to that point? I remember when he first came out writing and he did that Daredevil, blew me away. And I was like, man, I can't wait to read the next thing. And then it was just kind of like something would start and fizzle, and he got this rep.
Got that rep.
We have at the store so many runs of Green Arrow, the Quiver storyline that Kevin Smith wrote, that people have traded in, where it's like when that came out, Kevin Smith is writing a mainstream comic. Kevin Smith is writing, and everybody bought it. And then for whatever reason, like nobody is holding on to it in their collection. So when you go through, we've got boxes and boxes in the back, and you're flipping through long boxes trying to pull stuff out, to price and put out on the floor. And it's like, another run of Green Arrow. We've got six of those. Keep going. Find something else that's good. I have no excitement for anything the guy writes anymore. His name being attached to anything just doesn't do – I've got to read it first, he's lost all credit that he had. All his capital has dried up because so much of the stuff that he's done has just turned out – he was like when he was doing was it Bionic Man? He was doing Green Hornet. He was doing all this other stuff. And it's like I like Green Hornet. That's a cool idea. I read his Green Hornet series and it was okay, but it just wasn't special.
And I actually haven't read any of his work just because I think when he was writing comics, that was during my period where I was out of reading monthlies. So I sort of missed everything.
You were poor.
Yes, poor and had other hobbies. But, I probably still won't be checking this out just because.
You think about the price you pay for comics anymore, and that, you love that feeling when you read a really killer book. But, compare it to the feeling when you read a book and you're like, ugh. It's not like you wasted a lot of your life reading it. And in the same sense, you're like, I just paid $4 for, kind of crummy, So, yeah, I can understand when people, they want those proven entities, somebody who will deliver.
Okay. Let's see. Next up. Oh, so another new ongoing book from Marvel. Alan Davis, Jim Starlin are just two of the creative names attached to a new ongoing Savage Hulk book in June. So this is going in the same vein as the Savage Wolverine, where it's rotating creative teams taking their spin on the Green Goliath. And I probably won't be checking this out either. Just because.
I thought the Hulk was savage by nature anyway. You know, I mean, how much.
I just don't know that I have enough interest in the Hulk, generally speaking, to be that concerned about another series with him, with self-contained story arcs set in random, you know, time periods and locations. You know what I mean? I read Hulk, you know, through Peter David's epic run.
Yeah.
And when that finally ended, then, you know, I just really didn't have much interest in it anymore because I was reading for the writer, not necessarily the character.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Let's see. Next up. So some guests that we had on a few previous faraway episode of Comic Book Chronicles, Giafo and Mast, they have some more Infinite Comics from Marvel coming out that they're attached to. At least Mast, I know, name is attached to the Spider-Man
Infinite Comics. It's both of them. They're the storyboard artists.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the storyboard and some other stuff, too.
See, like the articles I was reading just had had Mast's name on there. But that's good. So, Spider-Man, I think they said it's going to be, what, double bi-monthly or bi-weekly, however you say it, bi-weekly, maybe not, but I think Cullen Bunn's name was attached to it and some other writers. They're taking, like, turns, like, every three or four issues another team comes on to do writing. But Mast and Giafo are doing the storyboards for one specific arc. So I want to say congratulations to them.
Nice.
And I believe,
see what happens when you come on the Comic Book Chronicles?
And I believe this is attached to, well, this is actually like in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon universe.
Yes, it's Marvel Universe Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yes. Let's see, DC has a new ongoing book coming out in July, Infinity Man and the Forever People. Characters I know nothing about and have never heard of until I wrote this down.
I'm not sure with Infinity Man. I think he was in. Is it Infinity or Infinite Man? Because I think he was in Legion of Superheroes. I remember him. They used him in a battle against the Time Trapper in some.
Is this Fourth World stuff?
But yeah, the Forever People were part of Jack Kirby's Fourth World. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I first ran across that book, I'm like, oh, these people aren't, immortals. These are not the Marvel's immortals. These are DC's forever people. It's like he wanted to do the exact same book. So it's just like, what means the same thing? Oh, yeah, forever people. Sure, that's close enough to immortal. Why not?
Okay.
It was Eternals?
Or Eternals, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, Eternals.
And final bit of news is movie related. So first, it was revealed that Sebastian Stan, who was playing the Winter Soldier in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, he signed a 9-picture deal with Marvel.
Wow.
So usually it's like a 6-picture deal, but here in 9, I was like, that actually surprised me. That's like the Samuel Jackson kind of contract right there.
Wow.
Yeah, so they obviously...
they want to use that character.
Yeah. So expect him to be appearing a lot more in comic books lately. And yeah, comic books coming up soon too, besides Invaders, I'm sure.
Let's hope this movie is good. I mean...
it looks awesome.
It looks pretty good.
They've already signed the directors to direct Cap 3, which leads into the next and final bit of news, where it was announced that Marvel is going to launch Captain America 3 to go head-to-head against Batman versus Superman in 2016. on the same date.
Seriously?
Yeah. I saw that a couple hours ago. It came out.
Wow.
So does one flinch and move their date?
Wow.
I basically say it doesn't really matter, even if they do come out on the same date. Fans will go see both movies, so does it really matter?
You know what? I wouldn't want to go up against Superman Batman. I mean,
I don't know. Maybe they can get Matt Damon to be in Captain America 3, and so then you've got the Damon Affleck head-to-head battle at the box office.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, and some people were wondering if it was going to be the Doctor Strange movie, but it kind of makes sense to have it be like a sequel like Cap 3. It's not that, you know, if it loses to Batman Superman, it won't be that big a deal because you've had two previous movies already. You're not trying to launch another franchise like with Doctor Strange.
I'll go and take a portion of the money out of somebody else's when you can just take all of it 2-3 weeks later. You know, I don't get that.
Yeah. So, yeah, people think that something will be changed.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really Disney versus Warner Brothers, not Marvel versus DC. I mean, it's studios going head to head, not the comics, really. So studios are going to go to war. They're going to go to war.
Yeah, but you think about it in so many ways, how much, as far as, you know, Disney versus Warner Brothers, Disney's blowing them out of the water, in my opinion. I mean, Marvel's built this really, I mean, years ago, people knew, yeah, might have known who, a comic book fan would know who Iron Man was, but your average person wouldn't.
Mm.
You know, I mean, everybody always to this day would know who Superman, Batman was. You know.
Although, my main concern, though, is that Iron Man was kind of considered almost a second tier character in many ways.
Right.
And they gave the character to a guy who had free reign to pretty much do whatever he wanted. Right. He just went out, made the movie he wanted to do, and it became a big hit because it pretty much was hands off and he could do whatever he wanted. And then you had Iron Man 2, where the studio kind of dug their fingers in a little bit deeper. And then you had Iron Man 3, where their fingers were really dug in, and we could see the quality of the movies just going down, down, down. And I kind of worry as they do this universe building, as the studio kind of clamps down and they have this grand vision of where they want the movies to go and, you know, what they want them to do, you're going to start ending up with more of these formulaic cookie-cutter type films that have to fit their franchise, whereas the first movie was so good because it didn't have to live up to anything, it didn't have to match anything, and they were just free to experiment and play.
To a certain extent, I have to disagree because, you know, Iron Man is kind of a B-level, or has been a B-level player for a long time because his rogues gallery just was not that good. So I think there's only so many villains that they can mine to put into Iron Man movies. So, and, you know, I mean, there's a couple of storylines that they can still tap, you know, they're kind of leaning towards Armor Wars. They're trying to hint at Demon in a Bottle, but there's not that much there with Iron Man. So I think that was kind of, you know, like doing two sequels exposes that somewhat.
Well, but
I'm just saying, like, I think it's just character specific in that sense.
I didn't have a problem with Whiplash, the character. I had a problem with the way that they built up to this final battle where they punked him out in 20 seconds. And then they bring in the Mandarin only to have the Mandarin be not the Mandarin, you know. The way that they built these movies up just to kind of not do them at the last minute for
right.
whatever
well,
reason.
Well, I think
they
always Mandarin seem to, is tremendously racist. That's the problem.
Well, but even if you were to take him as a modern, you know, if you took a modern twist on him and have him be, say, a communist Chinese businessman, I mean, then you're totally going to make it a story that relates to today.
Right.
You know, he could be the communist Chinese version of Tony Stark with his his 10 rings are his 10 fingers, the tentacles going into every level of business and every corner of the planet and everything like that. There are ways that you could have made that character work. And instead, it's just they do that third act where it's like they got to throw in that Vince Russo twist just to have a twist. You know, just, oh my, you didn't see that coming. It's like, well, no, I didn't, but it sucks, you know? Right. I'm afraid that they kind of make the first movie and they allow the director to have some freedom to play with the character, to build their little corner of the world. And then I'm just afraid that each of those sequels, as they come out, it has to move further and further into that formula. And we just kind of follow that Batman arc. Batman, Batman Returns, Batman and Robin, Batman Forever. I don't even want to watch them, you know, after a couple movies.
Okay.
So there.
So yes, different opinions on, and of course, I always say sooner or later this comic book movie boom has to bust.
It's a bust, yeah.
It's just a matter of when it happens. What's going to be?
It's going to be Superman, Batman killing it.
It's going to be Ant-Man.
You know,
no one's going to care about Ant-Man.
I got to disagree. I mean, you're talking. You still always, no matter all this time, decades after decades, they're still telling Batman stories. They're still telling, you know. But the one thing that keeps it going is comics, and comics changing with time. And if they don't adapt the stories to modern things, like you were saying, then they will do that. But actually, if they're smart, they could keep it going a long time.
Okay. Oh, and I guess the only other thing I'm thinking about is going back just to Cap 2, if the, you know, rumors of how that one ends, I'd be interested to see how that affects Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. if it gets a second season. Lots of stuff could be changed.
I think they already signed it for another season.
Then, yeah, the whole dynamic of the show could be different, but that's a discussion for another time. And that's it for news. So let's get to discussing some of this week's books. Let's see. What's a good one to start with this week? I guess I'll throw out Avengers Undercover number 1. As Dirt pulls up cover for it. So Avengers Undercover is the spin off from Avengers Arena, which involved Arcade capturing 16 superpowered teens, taking them to his murder world and making them fight to the death.
So wait, from Avengers Academy.
Yes. Well, Avengers Arena spun off from Avengers Academy.
Right.
And so now Undercover spins off from Arena.
Yes. Hmm. So when Avengers Arena ended, spoiler alert, because it's been out long enough, some of the kids were able to escape from Murder World, but then they realized that Arcade himself escaped, and he had been recording the whole 30 days of them on Murder World, and he uploaded the videos to YouTube. And the kids became sort of a instant sensation. Yeah, celebrities in their own right. And some of the kids the issue starts off with the kids dealing with the aftermath. It's been, I think they said, like 6 months since they escaped Murder World. So some are dealing with it better than others. Cullen does something, and so basically, everyone knows that the kids go undercover to infiltrate the Masters of Evil on, was it Begalia? And they call the evil land that Baron Zemo has for himself. And without giving too much away, I do like the twist of why they go to Begalia. So I'll leave that to people to read the book. To find that out themselves.
Right. I haven't had a chance to take a look at it yet. What'd you think of the artwork? Because I noticed that Kev Walker is working on it, and I really enjoyed his stuff. He did a lot of stuff with 2000 AD and the Judge Dredd stuff in Europe, and then he did, I think, two series of the Marvel Zombies books.
I loved his art. I liked it on Avengers Arena. I know he worked on Thunderbolts 2, I believe, with Jeff Parker, I think, was on that book then. And, yeah, the art in Avengers on the cover is it seems like it's even better. Yeah, it's even better than the Avengers Arena work. I need to see if it's the same colorist that did Arena.
I like
that. That can always make a difference as far as sort of like up in the level of the art. But yeah, it's a good book.
I enjoyed it. It was a good read, and it definitely benefited from being pretty much a direct sequel to Avengers Arena, and seeing what happened with the aftermath, and seeing how, you know, there's still a ripple effect from the events in Avengers Arena in the Marvel Universe. So that's kind of cool to see that, you know, the aftermath.
Okay. Anyone have a book they want to throw out there?
Did anybody read Batman number 29?
Yes, I did.
I read half of it until I realized this was the double-sized issue.
Right, that it was long.
I said, oop, let me save this time for reading some of these other, getting some other books read.
I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was a good use of the extra long issue, because they really did cram. What's funny about it is that they crammed a lot of development and storyline progression into this issue. So it felt like you were getting, you know, definitely getting a, you know, a good bang for your buck in this issue.
I also really enjoyed, like, we've seen the origin of Batman so many times with Bruce's parents getting killed, and we saw that once again flashbacking through this issue.
Right.
But he did it in such a way that when I got to that final page, I really felt bad. Like, in a way I haven't, like, you've become so desensitized to, yes, Bruce Wayne's parents are murdered, so then he becomes Batman. You know, you don't even question it or think about it, really. And when I got to the end of this issue, I was really like, man, I feel really bad for that whole situation in a way that I never, I never really felt that way before, because of the way they played with the events and they showed him as a kid and the family dynamic and everything in the midst of this giant battle that's happening trying to save Gotham City. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the issue overall.
I had a good time looking at some of, you know, Capullo's, you know, his art, his layouts, and the panel work and the transitions between panels, I thought was pretty, you know, it was pretty sharp. It was, you know, the action was pretty kinetic. So I definitely enjoyed Capullo's work on this issue, and it definitely looked like he was having fun with the script and fun with, you know, really what's happening in Gotham at this point, because it's the Riddler playing havoc with the city that's basically going through its own Katrina.
And I also enjoy the fact that they give a good reason to establish the relationship between Gordon and Batman, that it's not just, you know, one day the commissioner needs help and, hey, this guy in the bat suit shows up and he seems like an all right guy, so now we're going to work together. Like, this book actually did a really good job of building on that relationship between the two characters, so you have a better understanding of why they trust each other and really only each other compared to everyone else in Gotham City. I mean, like, you knew all the other policemen were dirtbags. That's kind of the Gotham City, M.O. Right. But, I mean, this really built up the reason why those two trust each other and nobody else.
Okay. So, yeah, I'll be finishing that this weekend. Are you back, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm back. I was just listening to him talk about, you know, how he enjoyed the panel layout and how he enjoyed, you know, how – you know, it flowed throughout the story, and it was just kind of nice to hear somebody, you know, who gets you read the stories so much and you just get up caught in the story, and that's what you should do. But it's cool to hear somebody know they're looking at the actual, you know, the way they can tell when an artist is having fun.
Right.
You know, and really cutting loose. And I don't hear too many people say that. So that's the first time I've heard. I was just listening to you talk and somebody say, hey, I'm not only enjoying the story, but I can see the work behind it. So that's very cool to me.
All right. Here's what I'm going to do. Applaud myself.
That's, that we bring the that kind of review analysis on Comic Book Chronicles and nowhere else.
Nice.
I will mention the nice sort of the Dark Knight Returns panel shot.
Yes,
the lightning bolt.
Yeah. Right, and a noticeably skinnier Batman. You know, definitely reflecting that he's younger.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did get to that portion of the book, so I did see that. Okay, I guess I'll bring up a book that I know Dirt read also, Magnus Robot Fighter number one.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find it. There it is.
Which I reviewed.
I did not have a chance to read this.
The review is up on theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com, so check that out. So, just background for myself, I was not familiar at all with Magnus Robot Fire before reading this issue.
What?
I had heard how last year Dynamite, I think...
Come on, seriously, his name is Magnus. He fights robots.
Yeah, that's your background. That's all you need.
I had heard the name Magnus. That does ring a bell, but I didn't know anything about him. And last year, Dynamite Comics bought the Go Key license from Valiant, I believe. So, which they sort of had like little teaser images revealing, you know, the creative teams on, I think, the four Gold Key titles: Turok, Dinosaur Hunter, Magnus Robot Fighter, Solar, something, Man of Energy.
Man of the Atom,
and Dr. Spectre, I think, is the last one.
Spectrum, I think.
Spectrum.
Spectre. Spectre.
I think it's Spectre.
Okay.
I think it's Spectre. S P E C T O R.
No, S P E K T O R.
Okay.
Spector.
Gotcha. So I've made it a point to try each of these books. So far, we've only had two come out, I believe. Turok, which is from Greg Pak, and unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be reading that one anymore. But Magnus was pretty nice. That's by Fred Van Lent. Or Lente, and Corey Smith on art. And the art was nice. I loved, like Corey, like I said in the review, Corey Smith, I liked how he gave expression and sort of emotion to each character that he illustrated. And seeing Magnus sort of living, even though at the beginning of the issue, I think he goes by a different name, his real name, whatever.
Tommy, I guess if you could,
Russell or something like that.
Yeah, I forget.
Whatever you consider his real life. But he's a teacher, and he has a wife and a father figure in his life. And sort of, you know, he's going about his everyday life, and then all of a sudden he's thrown into another location and environment altogether, and this is when he's actually like the Magnus person. And I guess sort of the mystery of what's going on has compelled me.
Yeah, the thing is, they don't really reveal. He like kind of wakes up and his surroundings have changed, and you don't know if it was a dream, like implanted memories type thing, or if time has passed. You know, like you're not really sure like what's reality and what's not, which I kind of enjoyed that play on it. You're not exactly sure if that. The vision that he has of his past life is real or not. And I kind of like that play on the character.
You know, I haven't read the book, but I got to respect the guy that's got a day job and then goes out and does this at night, you know, because I get off of work and I'm like ready for the couch. So, I mean, you got to respect that kind of.
To go out and fight robots?
Yeah, I go dinosaurs.
But yeah, When Valiant relaunched, I was really excited, you know, 2 years ago, whenever it was that they were relaunching. But Magnus and Solar were two of my favorite characters in the whole Valiant universe thing. And when I saw that they weren't going to be part of the new Valiant, I was really disappointed. Dark Horse did their thing a couple years ago where they tried to do the characters and they gave them each like 6 issues or 4 issues, whatever. And they were okay, but nothing really special. So when Dynamite was like, once again, hey, we're grabbing these characters and we're doing a brand new start, I was just kind of like, oh, really? Like, you know, like I was excited 2 years ago. Now I'm not as excited. And Turok came out. Turok really didn't do anything for me. I wasn't real impressed with that. But then Magnus, I love this book. This book gave me the right combination of you had a character that you empathize with. You've got a world that is similar yet different, so it's a little disorienting. You've got the mystery of what his true history is and what's going on in the world around him. And it just had enough of those pieces that I liked the character and I was intrigued by the story that I'm definitely picking up the next issue. Like there's nothing that's going to stop me from reading that next one.
Nice.
All right. Let's see. Let me go through. Let me find one that Agent 70 read. Tell us about Fantastic Four number 2.
This was an interesting follow-up issue to the first issue that Robinson and Kirk did. The first issue ends on a cliffhanger with the Baxter Building exploding and some creatures coming through a rift or a portal. This issue expands on that, and what's revealed is related to, spoiler alert, is related to, God forbid they bring this back, Heroes Reborn and Heroes Return.
What?
There's some, yes, this relates back to it.
The whole Rob Liefeld,
yep.
Man Boob,
yep, the whole pocket universe thing. Yes. So this, this kind of taps into the pocket universe, story. That, you know, basically it's Franklin Richards creating this pocket universe for the heroes to be reborn in and return from. So that's basically one of the main premises of the story. And basically what Franklin says is that his pocket universe, or his pocket world has gotten sick. And, you know, there's twists and turns regarding that, and this issue also ends on a cliffhanger. So, you know, this is like two issues in a row with fairly substantial cliffhangers, and I wasn't so keen on what developed in this issue. I thought the first issue was pretty well done. This one, you know, definitely progressed the story, but at the same time, yeah, I'm not sure where it's going to go next, which is a good thing too. You know, it keeps the suspense going.
Okay. So, yeah, the reason I wanted you to discuss Fantastic Four number 2 is because I know you're the Fantastic Four fan of the show, and
yeah,
I'm trying to give it a shot. I haven't gotten to this issue yet, but I will.
Right. I'm having trouble. Yeah, I'm having trouble. I'm still grasping for words, trying to describe how I feel about where, you know, the direction this is going in. Like I said, the fact that Robinson is bringing up Heroes Reborn and Heroes Return and kind of referencing that kind of gives me, you know, gives me pause.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to see where it goes with issue 3. I'm actually not very keen on the red and black color scheme right now. It's kind of distracting to me. I don't recognize it as Fantastic Four colors, which obviously they're not. But it doesn't rub me the right. It rubs me the wrong way.
I'm just wondering, with the idea of you talking about the pocket universe, parallel dimension type stuff, with them suddenly being red and black instead of blue and white, do you think this is an alternate universe? Do you think they're trying to trick us here by showing us a different reality, and at some point it'll flip to Marvel 616?
Or they're going to make the Human Torch black at some point.
Maybe.
You know, I'm not 100% sure, you know, where they're going with this, but you know, I mean, that's not a bad theory. It's not a bad theory.
That would be at least different, which I don't mind different.
Right. You know, that would be, you know, like you know, imagine we're actually following around an alternate universe Fantastic Four.
Okay. Let's see what else came out. Let's see. What other DC books did anyone read?
I read, I can throw in two quick things. I had good things to say about how they wrapped up the storyline in Nightwing. Number 29, this issue is about, you know, kind of coming to grips with grief and mourning and trying to get over and go beyond, you know, tragedy that happens in your life. I thought, you know, it was a pretty, what's the best way to put it? It's a pretty neat touching. Way to wrap this up. Yeah, it was touching to a certain extent, I guess. It was a neat way to wrap up this storyline, which is happening at some nebulous point in history because of Forever Evil.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I enjoyed the story for what it was, but the problem right. was they solicited this book as, you know, and the stunning developments that lead directly into Forever Evil. And then you get to the end, and it's like, this has nothing to do with Forever Evil.
Right. He just opened, you know, he's just like, yeah, I'm still Nightwing. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's pretty much how it ends.
So Kyle Higgins gets his nice send-off for James Tynion to come on next issue and give us the nice what happens to Dick after Forever Evil is over.
Oh.
At least that's the way it's solicited.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably how it's going to roll. And I wanted to just bring up very quickly Justice League of America number 13.
How is that? Because I stopped reading it once it became just the Stargirl and...
Wait. I found the perfect... Tim's voice popped into my head when I was reading this. So give me just a moment here to deflect the conversation a bit. As I was reading this, they're trying to break the Firestorm prison and get everybody out.
Right.
And Tim's voice immediately popped in my head going, Hickman mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what this was. This was 23 pages, 22 pages, whatever, of Hickman mumbo jumbo.
Nothing happening.
Of it's the prison in your mind. You must break free. You must reach beyond. The trap has been set, but you've sprung
and
the key.
And nothing happened.
Well,
not except, a blessed thing.
Except they figured out how to defeat the prison eventually, maybe if they think maybe. They can get to the right point, Lord. If you know, whatever. But I mean, yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was Hickman mumbo jumbo through this entire issue.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm fearing that he's doing a lot of books now, but I'm not sure I'm a Matt Kent fan. I don't know if he's being...
No, but I think this is definitely a side effect of being a direct Forever Evil tie-in.
Yeah. I think if he wasn't in a book that was tied to Forever Evil, then it would have worked a lot better. But I think they basically told him, hey, you can't really develop anything for 4 months. You just have to sit there and spin your wheels.
Yeah.
And much. So this is the best that he can do in keeping the status quo.
And trying to develop Stargirl a little bit.
Right. Right. So he's like, I can at least spend this time building up this character, so at least maybe you'll care about her in the long run.
The long run, meaning Justice League United.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's probably hampered a little bit having to tell this Forever Evil tie-in story and then having to sort of waste time until Forever Evil ends. So... Which just leads to me, my whole complaint of Forever Evil, this whole thing's taking too long.
I can't believe it's still going on.
And no other books are referencing it.
It's Forever Evil. It's the evil that's forever.
It just takes forever.
Which is a problem all to itself.
Right.
But never mind. I was going to try to give this another shot, but I hear the mumbo jumbo, nope.
Yeah, well, because I guess what I kind of came to realize with this issue in particular is that when they did Trinity War was structured so that you would read Justice League, you would read Justice League Dark, you would read Justice League of America, and then the next month it would repeat. So you had this kind of ongoing story between all three of them. And I kind of realized... Wait a minute. As soon as Forever Evil started, all of these books are tie-ins to Forever Evil, but they dropped that connection.
Yeah.
You could totally skip Justice League of America for all of these Forever Evil, because I'm sure in Justice League 28 or whatever, they're all just going to – you're going to see Firestorm explode. Everybody busts out, and they're like, thanks, Stargirl, for figuring that out. And that's all you're going to need
yep.
of these four or five issues of Justice League of America.
pretty much. That's what I did. Once Forever Evil started, I've just been reading Justice League. That's it. I've read a couple of the Justice League Dark, and I even stopped reading that again. So, not because I'm dislike magic. I actually kind of like Justice League Dark during Trinity War. But, yeah, the Blight stuff and just nothing I need to read or keep up with.
With this big event thing, I mean, I don't remember, I mean, and granted, I'm dating myself, but, I mean, how there always had to be one gigantic event, you know, that everything ties together to. And
it was usually always a summer thing. So it was maybe 3 months at the most.
Right.
Whereas this is, they set it as a 7 month, 7 issue thing, but there have been so many delays in between that it's been 8 months now or something, and they're only on
issue. Has it been that long?
It's been a long time. Forever. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing they did. They used to have it. It was a summertime thing because they wanted to grab you in a big story, you know, so you didn't forget about it while you're out playing in the summertime. I mean, and now it turns into like this big year. Everything is a big year-long move to one event to the next event. I don't know. It can be cool, and yet it can be just so overdone, and you just wait for it to end.
And I guess part of it is because it developed right out of Trinity War. It's like you have the fatigue of Trinity War ending, but then it goes straight into Forever Evil, so it just feels like that was one long storyline in itself. Yeah. Like it has two different titles, but it's really, you know, just the same story as one giant event going to the next giant event.
Okay. I forgot I did read another DC book this week. There was the book I read and finished right before the show started. And that is Superman Wonder Woman number 6.
I didn't put it on my list.
The only reason I sped read it was because I saw Newsarama had some article sort of breaking down what happened in it, like something big happened. So I was like, oh, I need to read this then. And I guess something big does happen at the end, but we won't actually get into it because it's not like it's going to stick anyway.
Right. It's kind of lame if you ask me.
Yeah.
Well, I was very disappointed by the ending.
I mean, the ending, I didn't take the ending as that either of them were dead. I mean, they're going to need some time to recover and heal and whatever. But my biggest problem was you had one of these incidents where they go and they're talking to what's his face who makes all the weapons for Mount. Yeah. And they're like, we need the element of surprise. He's like, oh, yeah, I just happen to have an invisible chariot over here. You can use that. Where it's like
plot device.
Yeah, it's not something that was referenced. It never came up any time before.
It doesn't exist in mythology, you know.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, yeah, well, you know, there's this invisible chariot, which I'm sure will lead to the whole invisible jet.
Exactly. I thought it was just going to be, hey, we're going to give you an invisible jet.
The invisible jet did make an appearance in Justice League of America 2 or 3, I believe. The team took it to fight the whatever the group of villains.
It was also in the Lego movie.
Was it?
Yeah. My God. Quick, everybody get to the Batmobile. And they blow it up. Wonder Woman goes, hey, everybody get to the invisible jet. Darn it. That's yeah. Funny. But yeah, that was just one of those moments where I was reading the story and that's where it kind of fell apart to me a little bit. Where it's just like, oh, luckily you had this invisible chariot just sitting over here to the side that they could use. Yeah. You
know? I was just going to say that's the cheapest Lego set you're ever going to get, the Invisible Jet.
Hey, I bought 3.
That's right.
Okay.
Oh, mercy.
So, let's see. What else can we bring up?
Did anyone read Superior Spider-Man number 29?
I did.
I did.
That was pretty awesome. I think it's moving forward. I think it's definitely hurtling towards the the end game.
Maybe I'm the only one because I have this optimism because I like Otto as Spider-Man so much, but I don't think he's going away.
I don't think so either.
I think Peter is somehow going to come back, and Otto is still going to exist in a Peter body somewhere, or in the body of Spider-Man 2099, or something. Like it just feels like.
They're going to remake him. I think they're going to remake him to set up the possible appearance of a Dr. Octopus in the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but we'll see.
Well, I kind of feel like they're setting him up to continue to be a hero in the same way they kind of did with Scarlet Spider a couple of years ago, that he is still going to exist in the Spider-Verse somewhere, but he is not going to be a villain anymore. He's going to be, you know, for lack of a better term, an anti-hero.
Things are cool. It's the 90s again.
Well, everything goes in circles.
I still want my Spider-Man book where it's like Scarlet Spider, Venom, Spider-Man 2099, and whatever version Otto ends up in. Just have all Spider-Man in one book.
I'd probably, you know, especially if they're all in like a lake house. You know, it's like, and they have to have day jobs. So they all work in like the same coffee shop or something. And
they're all baristas at Starbucks.
You call it Avenging Spider-Man or something. Give it some nice adjective. Bring that adjective back. I do want to bring up Wolverine number 3 right quick, just because how frantic Wolverine is in this issue was hilarious. It's like one thing after another, and it's like you could just see his head want to like explode from like all this stress. The stress was getting to him. And there was the one quote that sums it all up where Wolverine runs screaming, "Damn everything!"
Wow. Did they ever explain the murder in the first issue?
No. Well, they explained in the second issue that he murdered him.
Right, that he's just trying to maintain this, you know, this image.
Oh, so they're saying that it was legit?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yep. They did take this issue to kind of sort of lay seeds of what exactly is going on and why Wolverine is working with the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. So. Hey, did anyone read Hawkeye number 17 this week?
Nope.
Very briefly.
This was actually a fun read, and you have to actually read the whole book and the letters page because it kind of goes into why we're talking about a holiday special themed story in the middle of February or March.
I do want to point out real quick that even though the cover to this issue is similar to Saga number 12, that the inside is completely different. So you don't have to worry about the guy with the TV on his head in this issue of Hawkeye.
Right.
Mm. And we should mention that artist from Chris
Eliopoulos.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it was a fun read. It's definitely, I think, you know, like I said, you have to read all the way through, including the letters page, because what the editor is inviting people to do is sort of, you know, write in and talk about what you think the story was actually about.
Is Nick Lowe the editor on this?
I think it's Sanaa. Oh, at least the assistant editor was the one who was writing. Sanaa Amanat, I think.
Yes.
The assistant editor for Hawkeye. So.
Yeah, I'm sorry, pronounce that again, please.
Sanaa Amanat.
Three times fast.
Sanaa Amanat. Come on, man.
I believe you're right. Yeah, I think she is the editor. Because I was going to say, I know in the Moon Knight letters page, Nick Lowe wanted people to handwrite letters. They were only going to publish handwritten letters.
I saw that.
No kidding.
Makes no sense, but okay.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before. Nobody can read my handwriting. I should send one in. Yeah. No. I've got the scribble from this guy, you know.
Those poor assistant editors having to read the scrabble from people.
One other thing I want to talk about that I did read, and I read this for really no good reason. I'm trying to find the cover here real quick, but I actually read the $6 Million Man that came out this week. Trying to find what I did with the cover for it. What was that? That's a Dynamite book. But regardless, I will have to admit that I am not like the biggest historian when it comes to the $6 Million Man. I watched a bunch of them in syndication when I was a little kid, obviously. But it was not, it's not one of those things where I've gone back. Like when I was in college, we sat down and we watched all four seasons of the $6 Million Man back to back in one weekend.
I think that's pretty hard. That would be pretty hard.
But Dynamite has this thing where they do variant covers that have actually kid-friendly artwork for no reason. So, like, the Green Hornet books have a Chris Iliopoulos alternate cover. The Red Sonja books have a kid-friendly cover. And this one had a kid-friendly cover by Ken Hazer. And it kind of had this like Garbage Pail Kid, Cabbage Patch Kid kind of look to it. And I was like, well, that's kind of funky. So I'll just go ahead and buy it because of the cover. But I actually sat down and read it. And I really enjoyed the story. I wasn't expecting to, you know, not being the biggest fan of $6 Million Man. But I figured I'd at least give it a shot. And going back to what we were saying earlier with Kevin Smith did Bionic Man a few years ago. And that just really didn't do much for me. The story basically is this probe was sent to Venus, and it was supposed to burn up in the atmosphere but collect a bunch of data and send it back to Earth. And for whatever reason, something in space took a hold of the probe, managed to keep it from destroying itself, and then sent it back to Earth. And so it crash lands in the middle of the ocean. So you've got this kind of funky – and it's set in the 70s. So you've got this funky vibe through the entire book with guys with afros, and they can't believe there's a woman here in the office, and they're driving the big cars, and
no cell phones.
Yeah, it just really had that great, anachronistic feel to it. Mm. And I just really got a kick out of reading it. Like after a while, I was hearing Lee Major's voice in my head while I'm reading. Like the way the voice is written, it got that inflection to it. I was just kind of going through, and I really enjoyed it. So I am going to stick with that at least for a couple more issues and see if it holds up. But I did enjoy that quite a bit.
Nice, nice.
I mean, you were talking to a guy who actually had the $6 Million Man action figure.
Nice. I envy you.
It is envy worthy.
Did you have that that nice coat jacket?
He had the jumpsuit. He had a nice jumpsuit.
I gotta say, if you enjoyed it, I would say give the book a shot because
I am going to let you say that.
Yeah.
Are there any other books this week you read, Bruce, that you want to mention?
You know, I'm probably a little bit behind on reading. I mean, I'd read.
Or anything at all you're
reading. There you like the newspaper. No, I read the Moon Knight reboot.
What'd you think?
Well, you know what? I thought it was kind of interesting. I'm kind of curious to see what it does. It wasn't what I expected, which I guess is a cool feeling. You know, I didn't know SpongeBob had a comic.
The Last Poor Sandwich.
Yeah, that's Poor Sandwich. Nice.
This is one of my daughter's favorite comics.
Nice.
That's cool.
So, Moon Knight, number one, you've read.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'll grab stuff at the shop. Just, you know, I like to read comics. I don't always, and sometimes I'll follow a series, but I get interrupted because there's times where I've got to work on a script or do this, so it's harder for me to follow, you know, certain runs. I try stuff I haven't read before. Sometimes I'll pick up a book that, like, I don't, like, I did try The Bionic Man when that came out, or I did try a couple of different ones. I mean, I didn't see The Magnus, but I would have grabbed that. You know, I mean, so my reading patterns, you know, I fall behind on it, and then maybe I'll power it out. But it's just, it's tough when you're trying to work on them and you sit there and go, okay, I got to focus on writing tonight, or I got to focus on making sure this artist is still working on it and not something else. So I fall behind.
Do you ever have the fear that you're going to read something and really enjoy it and somehow it's going to, like, you're going to unintentionally steal it?
You know, I never thought about that, and now I'll be going to therapy over that.
You're welcome.
You know, I mean, I think probably in everybody's mind there's something they lift from other people's work, whether they realize it or not. I mean, when I did the first Howard, somebody said they thought it seemed like there was like a touch of Calvin and Hobbes.
Hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah, now that you say that, but no, I've had people say, hey, that book reminded me of this. And I'm, you know, thinking, did I read that? You know, did that? And now I'll focus on that even more.
Now you have to stop reading comics just so you have plausible deniability.
No, you know what? I mean, for an indie guy, you know, I don't worry about it too much. I don't worry about it. I do like reading books that will, you'll sit there and you'll read something and you'll say, wow, I really like how he did that. That might change my thinking. Maybe I don't have to tell a story this way or I'll do this. I mean, but it's a lot different than, you know, Marvel or DC. I can't, you know, they can build a long-term story. And I've got, you know, a small amount of time that if I don't grab them and they don't want to read it or they want to read the next one, it's done. So I try to, you know, I tend to like stuff that's, you know, I do like the, hey, the ending grabbed you. Hey, the cliffhanger. Hey, I didn't see that coming kind of stuff. I always tried to find ways to do something like that.
I do like how you brought up the, you know, having to sacrifice your reading to work on your craft, because I find myself trying to find that balance myself. Of course, it's also hard doing a podcast show, too. But
I mean, it's stuff you want to do something. I mean, I remember when I first started, one of the advice a guy gave me was stop playing video games. He's like, because you'll spend 5 or 6 hours doing that or all day doing that, when you should be writing, working on your craft, or trying to promote it. Oddly, promotion is the thing that takes forever.
You said pre-promotion?
Yeah, promotion. I mean, it takes forever to do it. I mean, you get like a really weird cross between being humble and feeling like a hooker. I mean, because you're out there all the time. And there's so much competition. So,
what type of promotion do you do?
You know what? I tried anything. I'll do. I mean, I know some people will just solely stick to comics, but now that people are reading books, it's gained such more respectability that I'll go to regular book blogs. I'll go to librarian book blogs. I try to hit a lot of librarian stuff, because if you get your graphic novel picked up by like the American Library Association, that's a lot of sales. So you have to think about targeting areas that you're going to reach.
Okay. I guess we can do our clicks of the week, which are basically just what picks our favorite comic books of the week. I'll mention Roddy Cat tweeted his to us. And, of course, you can always use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles. Roddy Cat said he wants to give a nod to Hawkeye 17, despite it leaving us hanging, but his click of the week looks to be FBP, Federal Bureau of, is it Physics, number 8?
I think so.
Yes. So that's his click of the week.
Nice.
And of course, I never think of mine ahead of time until this moment comes. Let's see, what did I read? Unless someone else wants to jump in and say what theirs was. I'll probably go with between Avengers Undercover and Magnus. I'm going to go with Avengers Undercover number 1.
Cool. Good. Then that leaves Magnus for me.
Yes. All right. Spread the love around.
Because right. That way I can say, mine is Magnus.
All right. And mine, surprise, surprise, was it a couple weeks already, I picked a DC book, Batman number 29.
Cool.
Wow, for you to pick not only a DC, but just a mainline, one of the big ones from DC, even. Not even like an obscure, crazy one.
Well, I mean, what, Aquaman is pretty good usually, but, you know.
Yeah, but he's the Iron Man of the DC Universe.
Nah!
Gets no respect.
He talks to the fishes.
Yeah. No RoboCop from you this week, Dirt?
No, those are over.
Oh.
Those are only the four for that month.
Oh, okay. Cause, yeah, I saw it was at RoboCop Last Stand. I guess you weren't reading that one, though, right?
No. Okay. Although I did finally get a chance to finish watching the movie, which I really enjoyed. The new RoboCop movie. Okay. Just very quickly, I'm going to throw this out there. A lot of people didn't like it because it wasn't a remake. They wanted to go in and just see a modern version of the old movie, and that's not what you got. The closest example, the closest analogy I can think of the new RoboCop movie is that it's RoboCop the Next Generation. Mm. Like, it's the same framework, but it was less of the cowboy diplomacy and more of the introspection and the intellectualization of the world in which he lives. And so there was a lot of talk about where does the man end and where does the machine begin and how much, you know, does the soul exist? And if it does, you know, do they need to respect that? And what are the ethical dilemmas that come with taking a man and putting him into a product? And like all of this stuff that was kind of barely touched upon and kind of hinted within the first two movies, like this one just hammered right into it. Like, let's have that philosophical discussion. Plus, you did have moments where there were explosions and shooting at things and, you know, a lot of exciting stuff. But when it really came down to it, the movie is much more of a character piece than an action movie. And I think that's why a lot of people were kind of disappointed in it, but I loved it.
Explosions.
And no one doing cocaine off a stripper in this one.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. So you're out.
Okay. So make sure to follow us on our Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheQuickNation. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Dirt is at PCN_dirt and at PopCultureNetwork.com. Roddy Cat, who's not here, is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And let's see, Dort Geekus, who was watching us tonight, he said his click of the week is he's torn between Avengers Undercover and Justice League 3000.
Okay.
Which I will be reading 3000 after I get off the air here. And Roddy Cat also says, no one read Captain Marvel.
I did read Captain Marvel. I didn't have a chance to talk about it. I didn't write it down, so I forgot about it.
I read it. I just didn't bring it up. It was good, though.
I liked it. It's a nice launching point.
There's a romantic relationship with Captain Marvel I had no clue about until
this. Yeah, that's a new, brand new development, I think. And it's a good development, I think.
I guess it's new, and you won't see it again for a while.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, I actually enjoyed this issue. It was cool. Captain Marvel's back.
I'm just glad that she's not wearing that hairdo anymore that they tried to introduce. offense, you know.
They mentioned Sanaa Aminat mentions it in the letters page.
That's right. That's right.
They launched it, and she had a new costume, a new hair. But they give a good explanation of why Carol Danvers. Danvers goes into space and why she would join the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. Agreed.
So, let's see. Remind everyone that we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you ever want to tune into a show, make sure to go through or go to theclicknation.com and check us out. And Dirt's cycling through a bunch of the covers if you're watching the video stream. And he's reminding me that there's a bunch of books that came out this week. So we didn't talk about
stuff.
Yeah, we can't talk about everything, people.
That's right.
But if you want to keep the conversation going, just use the Comic Book Chronicles hashtag on Twitter. Want to thank our special guest Bruce for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Whether he's here or not, he's still here in spirit, even if his audio may not be. For Bruce and Dirt and Agent 70 and Roddy Cat and Dork Geekus, I'm Tim DOWG. This is the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace!
Yeah.